Terrence Pop here with another episode that is
live from the lair.
Let's pretend that's true.
Yeah.
Trying to keep the tone down here, gentlemen. We got a new audio device doohickey thing, and I don't want it to freak out the editor.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
So we're going to try to keep this a little above monotone.
Do you like stories about serial killers? What about psychics? How about a psychic serial killer with a conscience wiping out the filth of society?
Yeah!
If you thought Dexter was a great show that went soft in its final seasons, these are the books for you. Introducing The Jericho Files, written by an old infantry grunt who has seen evil firsthand and digested it into grade-A gore porn with 5-star reviews all around. Click on the link tree in the Meat Gazer box and buy your copies today on Amazon, you filthy, dirty riggers.
All right, so Trump is putting together his cabinet, and he picked a individual, Pete Hegseth, who was a major in the National Guard, did some deployments. And I'm kind of hesitant on his pick, but I'm not in the hot seat, so I'm just a dude.
The dude abides.
And my opinion is strictly that. It's just an opinion of an old senior NCO who's been around the block quite a bit. I have gone toe-to-toe with the Army in regards to the bureaucracy in which they run, and the military is insanely crazy when it comes to the bureaucracy.
In order to be grounded, I've got to be crazy. And I must be crazy to keep flying.
Case in point, when my National Guard unit, Company F 425 Lurse Airborne Infantry, was mobilized out of the state of Michigan for deployment into Iraq the end of 2003, 2004, we got the alert order about 8 to 10 months out. But, 4 to 6 months prior to that, you get the super secret wink, wink, nod, nod, it's coming down the pipe briefing. I made sure the right people were in the proper places. I went and hunted guys down who needed to be, how shall we say, fixed and brought back into the island of misfit toys, because I needed those kind of guys. And the reason I say that is those individuals do not get along with bureaucracy, but in the two-way rifle range or on the battlefield, war, whatever you want to call it, those kind of men are invaluable. Truly they are. They're hard to replace. They're exceptionally difficult in the beginning to train. But once you get them with the program, wow. Having those guys on your team was an honor and a privilege. So I went above and beyond to make sure I had the right people in place when we got the official mobilization order. About a decade prior to this, the Army Reserve used to have, some combat arms, and the National Guard had combat arms, and there was some super secret drug deal to take the combat arms out of the Army Reserve and move it all over to the National Guard side of the house, along with, prize money and increased budgets to make sure that they're combat troops were up to standard for the modern army. Now, that did not take place at all. So by the time we got mobilized and we moved forward, we had state-of-the-art radios to communicate with the 1974 army. We had M60 machine guns, which you could no longer source parts for. We weren't authorized 50 cal Mark 19s. We were, I think, 40% in proper night vision devices. And what had happened in the background is the Michigan National Guard basically took that money and squandered it on other bullshit instead of the so-called agreement that they would, keep their combat troops up to the same standard in equipment and training as active, duty troops. And the only reason my unit was, in my opinion, as well off as it was, is the quality of the NCOs in the unit. The officers, they come and go, it is what it is. I've never really been a fan of officers and their ticket punching, and they're all a bunch of dick-sucking butt-fuckers, in my opinion.
Do you suck dicks?
Sir, yes, sir!
Except for a chosen few who have their heart in the right place. But that's another video. So we got all boxed up, packed up. We railheaded all our vehicles, and we went to Fort Bliss, Texas. Now, I don't understand what happened in the mix-up, other than it's a huge bureaucracy bullshit fight. But we were a airborne infantry unit, basically a core-level asset, because that's what long-range reconnaissance is. And they sent us to a combat service support mobilization site. That's a huge no-ah-ah, okay? And the officers involved, how shall we say this, wanted to keep a lid on it, to include my actual company commander, who we'll just call him Major Worthless. I was the ops NCOIC, so it was on me to train everyone up to standard. And the Army has, because they're a huge bureaucracy, they have whole manuals and books in regards to what tasks are supposed to be done prior to a infantry unit being sent forward into a theater of war. None of that was done. We didn't do the break contact drills, the raid, ambush, direct action, room clearing. I mean, none of it. My National Guard unit, who was going to go directly into combat, fired 60, 70 live rounds of ammunition, 120 to 160 rounds of blank ammunition. Everyone fired, basically for a familiarization fire, one belt of 5.56 in the SAWs and one belt in the 60s. Now, we went forward with 21 M60 machine guns. I think two or three were deficient free. The rest had deficiencies that would deadline them. We're talking cracked barrels, not functioning, gas tubes, broken extractors. I mean, you name it. It was just a huge clusterfuck. We had our vehicles, literally we rolled them off the rail yard. They were leaking transmission fluid, whatever, oil. It was a shit show. And we took them to Fort Bliss to have them brought up to standard. And they were supposedly brought up to standard, and two of the vehicles literally, quit running within 15 miles of taking them out of there. And because of the bureaucracy, and no one wanted to get embarrassed, word has it that my former commander accepted the risks, accepted the egregious weapons, accepted the fact that we didn't have proper radio equipment, and we did not do 80 to 90% of the actual tasks required to send an infantry unit forward, to Iraq. And everyone kept saying, oh yeah, well, you're gonna make up all these tasks in Kuwait. Well, right around this time, I get called to the head shed, and I notice there's a bunch of guys filling out paperwork, and I'm like, what exactly are they filling out? And they're like, oh, we're backdating RTEPs. Now, for the civilians out there, an RTEP is basically a record of past training tasks and events that were done. And I refused. I am not, you know, I can't do it. I've never been that guy. I'm not going to lie. I'm not doing that, especially when people's lives are on the line. And I told the commander, I'm not doing it. And the very next day, I was relieved for cause. I made up a bunch of bullshit, and, you know, it is what it is. And I was in the doghouse. Now, the Fort Bliss bureaucracy would not listen to me when I was the ops NCYC, and I basically told their lieutenant colonel, I gave him a list of what I needed, all of the ammunition. I only needed 4 or 5 ranges. I could, take care of the training. Everything would be good to go. Yes, we were in the wrong area, but if we still did the critical tasks and, you know, fired the weapons and did what we had to do, you know, we could still be a go at the station. And they basically told me to pound sand, and that's cool, I guess. But the average age of the men in the unit was 31 years old. Most guys had between 6 and 8 years of active duty. 80% of the unit was airborne qualified, and I think it was 10 to 17% of the men in the unit had combat infantrymen badges, meaning they had seen combat and war prior to this. And they knew the deal. They're not stupid. And everyone was freaking out.
You are freaking out, man.
And it got to the point where I had to actually draw a line in the sand and go against Big Army and the Michigan State National Guard bureaucracies. And I got royally screwed over for it. And what I did is I collected all of the deficiencies from the other NCOs in the unit. And I knew that it wouldn't go anywhere if it didn't have somebody with credentials name on it. So I wrote the whole thing up, and I called it the After Action Review of Fort Bliss, Fort Drum. Signed my name to it, my credentials, my Social Security number. And I got on the phone, and I called a buddy of mine who was working at the Pentagon. He was, I believe, in his last 2 or 3 years in the service. And I think he was working as an assistant to the DOD IG. You know, back then, you know, Rumsfeld's office was literally like 2 doors down from his, and you know, he had free access to get in there and talk to people and what have you. And he was a master sergeant, same rank as me, except he stayed on active duty. And I went in the National Guard because, you know, I had this grand idea. I was going to get married and have a family, which really worked out for me.
How's that working out for you?
And I emailed him the memo, and I called him the next day. And I asked him, you need to put this on Rumsfeld's desk. And he said, are you sure? Because this is going to really supercharge the system. And I told him, lives are in the balance, and this needs to happen. Now, mind you, during this whole clusterfuck, my company commander accepted the risks to have our company sent directly into Iraq. We didn't go through Kuwait to catch up on these past training events we didn't make up. And I'm going to be honest, there was a lot of fear in those guys' eyes when we were loading up the vehicles, and they were behind M60 machine guns that were nothing but bolt action, you know, rifles that were fed by a belt. Yeah, if we had 21 M60 machine guns that worked, that'd be a huge amount of firepower. But that's not how it played out. And we didn't have any 50 cals or Mark 19s. We drove from Anaconda all the way to Abu Ghraib. The pucker factor was real. Now, I'm telling you guys this story simply because this is what happens when you have bureaucracy and shitbag leadership who are trying to get a good OER and pad their record, and they literally don't care who they throw under the bus. I had been in that unit for 10 years. I knew everyone. I knew their families. I saw them with their children. This was far beyond, you know, knowing a guy for, you know, 6, 12, 18 months prior to going on a deployment on active duty, because soldiers are moved around on the regular when it comes to that. It was heartbreaking. I immediately got thrown under the bus, which I fully expected. The battalion commander we fell under, you know, he was beyond pissed because he was active duty. He was in the 202 MI battalion. And we were assigned to him as an intel asset, because that's what LRS does, even though they had no idea how to use us. That's another story. And all I can really say is we got our 50 cals, we got our Mark 19s, we got everyone trained up to speed in country, which it should not have taken place. There was a bunch of juggling, and a lot of people got their asses reamed. And good, I don't care. I heard that the OIC of Fort Bliss was relieved and retired, and the OIC of Fort Drum was relieved and retired.
Winning!
I mean, that was such a huge clusterfuck. And they would have got away with it if I had not decided to fall on my sword. I'd do it again in a heartbeat. And if you talk to a lot of guys, you know, most of the people who were in the chain of command back then are gone by now. But they didn't really have anything good to say about me. I was taken off the sergeant major list permanently, so it was told to me by the sergeant major of the Army, Preston. You know, told me to my face, I'm never going to make sergeant major. And I looked him in the face and told him, worth it. Plain and simple. I can only imagine the insanity that's going on now in the current military. From what I understand, almost everyone who had 20 years in the service has already dropped their retirement paperwork. Their reenlistment numbers, I believe they made them this time by severely lowering the standards, because the quality people are not coming in anymore, mainly because the word is out. The toxic leaders within the military have been throwing good soldiers out of the service left and right for nothing. I mean, I've talked to guys who were charged criminally, basically were found not guilty by a jury, and still received a general letter of reprimand, and their career was over. What we have going on now with the military is it is getting to a point where the toxic leaders are so egregious that the individuals from the past are telling their children and everyone around them, do not enlist in the military. There's really no benefit to do it at this point in time unless you have no other option. They have basically got rid of the 20-year retirement option, and they went to some 401k bullshit. And, you know, let's be honest, you are not going to save enough in the military 401k to retire. And even if you did, it could be taken away in a lawsuit and you're living on the street. I mean, that's the way I understand it at this time. Most of the guys who decide to stay in the service have to make E7 or E8 or higher to make it worth their time. Staying in the service and retiring as a staff sergeant is a fool's game. An E6, I don't know what that's called in the Navy or in the Air Force, what have you. E6, it's a fool's game. Truly it is. And they're going to really have to do some major overhauls to fix this. I mean, as it stands now, we have more 4-star generals on active duty basically since World War II. All right, now, I did 33 years in the service. I have met and had to deal with many, many general-level officers and full-bird colonels. And of all of the generals I've ever worked with, two of them were good, one was okay. The rest of them were arrogant, backstabbing, butt-fucking pieces of shit.
Y'all take a good look at this lump of shit. Remember what it looks like.
They didn't keep their word, and they had no problem throwing anyone under the bus so they could stay in just a little bit longer and perhaps get another star or go from the Eagle to their first star. And that is not what the military should be about. Okay, you need to severely curtail the regulations and the powers of these field grade officers. The regulations as they stand now were put in place for a draft army or a draft military. And let's face it, if you're a draftee, you are one notch above a slave. Meaning they pay you a little bit of money. That's it. And if you don't believe me, everyone watching this video, just Google all of the foreign graves that are basically filled with American servicemen. There's hundreds of thousands of them. So in the past, we drafted men, sent them overseas to their death, and we didn't even have the decency to ship their carcasses home and put it under a stone so their family could come and visit it. That is the mindset of the current military as it stands. And if they want to move forward and maintain a volunteer military, you're going to have to up your game, change a whole bunch of shit around, and perhaps give a little more power to the enlisted corps that could cock block some of these toxic commanders out there, because there are a lot of them and it needs to happen. So I am very eager to see what they're going to do. And in regards to the military suicide thing, now I started my fight against this opponent, suicide, death, what you call it, whatever you want, basically in 2009 with the video Purple Heart's Final Beat. And it got some attention. And I got some nastygrams from public relations from the Pentagon telling me that my stats were wrong. And they gave me some Leave It to Beaver land stats from the 1950s. Again, the bureaucracy trying to hide its shame. And since 2009, I have watched this government burn through billions upon billions of dollars, hire armies of psychologists, counselors. They have like 400 or 500, 800 numbers, and the suicide rates have not gone down. In fact, they've gone up. On top of that, the number 22 veterans a day committing suicide, I've always said that number is very low. The new number is somewhere around 44 a day veterans are committing suicide. I would say even higher than that, but they pretty much quit tracking you once you've been out of the service 5 years. You're worthless to them. You're a liability. They don't care. I got it. That's the way the world works. I understand. But if you multiply 44 a day times 365 days in a year, all right, you multiply that number by basically 32 to 37 years. By 2037, we would have allowed more veterans to commit suicide than all of the killed in action between 1901 and 1999 for this country. That is fucked up beyond all recognition.
Fubar.
We have a severe problem going on out there, destroying our veterans, and it's destroying men as well, on the regular and en masse. So hopefully we can figure out how to unfuck this whole pretzel knot of doom and get shit rolling again. Anyway, that's my rant for the evening. You guys take it easy.